Thank you for that reading, Joe, and invite you to pray with me. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Here we are again, this Sunday at the juncture of this strange and stressful week. Here we are on a Sunday that holds two places of significance. In our liturgical life, we remember our beloved who have died. We also find ourselves days away from a presidential election that is a source of anxiety and fear for many. Grief and fear, sorrow and anxiety, all centered in the midst of the storm of a virus that is spreading across our country, finding its way to our loved ones and upending our families and communities and places of work and worship. Here we are again. But the remarkable thing about today, what we remember, is that we are not alone. For Christians, our lives are always this strange mix. They take place in time, following this trudging path of whatever history brings. But we also believe there's more than that. Creation is part of a bigger story. It's a story of people who trusted God to love them, to comfort them, to come for them in the worst moments of the world. And we believe that those people continue to be present to us as this great community of saints. And then we trust God to care for them forever. They will hunger no more and thirst no more. The sun will not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. He will guide them to springs of water of life. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Revelation gives us this comforting passage we read today, hope for what follows the trials of this life. Hearing this passage on its own, we might think, that's very nice. It's wonderful that one day suffering will end. But what about today? We are worried today about babies taken from the arms of their mothers at the U.S.-Mexico border. Today, we watch clips of the Alamance police firing tear gas at a crowd, including children going to the polls and people from our congregation. Today, we are afraid for our country. Today, we are afraid for our sick parents. Today, we are angry and scared. So what about today? Just by a quick show of hands, how many of us have been told that the book of Revelation is about the future? It's a prophecy about something that hasn't happened yet. Sir? I figured. Any of us who've been sort of subjected to the Left Behind series sort of have a lot of different images in our heads for what, and a lot of probably discomforting ideas about what is held in this book of Revelation that we read today. That's actually a fairly new interpretation, one that was picked up by a set of powerful church people with an equally powerful political agenda they were trying to push through. But when we read John, the revelation he's talking about does not take place in the future. It's actually his present reality that he is describing. John is writing a letter to churches that are struggling, and they are struggling as we are struggling today. When we hear John's prophecy, we aren't meant to hear about future times. I see the world I know. In the earliest stages of this great undoing of earthly life, God, the author of creation, takes the seal off a scroll. And in chapter 6, the scene just before what we heard today, these four writers emerge from the scroll. We probably have heard about them, and even if we don't know the story of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, that happens just before what we heard today. And it's this moment where God stops holding back human violence. God unleashes us to ourselves. These four metaphoric horsemen John describes as the trauma that we leash upon one another. He says that in Revelation 6:4. One of my favorite renderings of this terrible moment comes from this woodcut by Albrecht Dürer. Would you mind putting that up on the screen for me, Craig, so we can everybody can get a chance to see it? So he did this whole series of woodcuts around Revelation, and his art shows the apocalypse in his day. Albrecht Dürer also read the story as something that happened in his time. These were not otherworldly characters that he puts into this woodcut. You can look and see that there are two military, looks like they're like two horsemen on military garb. And those are actually warriors of the Turkish Empire. That was the nation that was threatening Europe during Dürer's day. And this third one with the, that is sort of the big one right in the middle, is a banker or a pawnbroker. And he is there to exploit the poor during the day, Dürer's day. I love this picture because it reminds us that we can recast Revelation in any period of history as tanks rolling into Tiananmen Square, American helicopters dropping cluster bombs on Vietnamese families, or white supremacist militias groups haunting U.S. protests during the movement for Black Lives. I want you to see something else here. If you look at the people at the bottom, who are being trampled underneath these horses that represent military and economic threats, you can see that there are no distinctions in the casualties. Faithful people do not survive being trampled, and neither are the wicked. When Dürer carved this, you can see there's sort of a pompous burgher down there and a stunned peasant, a seamstress, and a monk, but they all meet this common death. Because we are all bound up in the same destruction of our world, all of us. You can see these horsemen riding closer and closer, and they're layered in this picture with each rider sort of moving towards us. Do you see that? But look in the bottom corner at the left. This is actually the horseman that's closest to us, but he's sickly and riding on this gaunt horse. And even though he's closest to us, he's actually at the back of the horseman. You see how Dürer sort of does both those things at the same time. And because he's so small, he's actually not the first thing to attract your attention. It's actually easy to overlook him with these massive stallions and their powerful weapons. Does anyone know who the fourth rider is? This is death. Death is the one who is given authority. This is the specter, the unseen specter behind the destruction, the acting force of Rome, the occupier of Judea, and the destroyer of Rome. We meet death, the ruler who achieves wealth and prosperity through slavery and sword. John's vision of the four horsemen is not designed to explain suffering or evil, or to help us enliven our understanding of the relationship between God's action and human will. What we're meant to see in this is that the destruction we are unleashing on each other in every generation is towards our mutual death. Craig, you can take that picture down. I wanted you to get a good look at what comes directly before this story. Because immediately we launch into this next scene in this movie that's sort of playing out in front of John that he catalogs for us to read. And we're transported from that scene to this giant block party where people who have the skin of oak and coffee and porcelain and chestnut are speaking Mandarin and Quechua and Kiswahili and Finnish. This great mix of people have come through the Great Tribulation, that scene we just saw. They've died and they've been trampled underfoot by the terror and catastrophe of the powerful work of destruction in our world. Here we're asked to remember on this day one of the truths of our lives, that we do not get out of this life alive. The work of the horsemen is all around us, and we can hear the hoofbeats. We know this. And as much as we want to avoid it, we hold this truth deep inside, and today we look at it. We need to remember when we read Revelation that nowhere in John's Revelation do people go seeking out suffering. They don't have to look for it. We unleash destruction and death on one another with no need for God to cast down pain or for us to seek it out. God simply leaves us to our own devices. That's the first truth of this day. But there's another truth. It is one that runs so deep that no sword can touch it, no bomb can blast it to pieces, and is the reason that John writes these words to the seven churches who are struggling with what it means to live in the death and destruction of occupying Rome. God is here. And God is among us in people. People who keep showing up over and over, in people who refuse to let the destruction and death be the final word. Some of those people, we know their names and their stories. They're the people who fill out our imagination for what is possible. Corrie Ten Boom, whose family hid Jews from the Nazis before she and her whole family were caught and sent to a concentration camp. Heather Heyer, who died at the hands of white supremacists during the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally. The Comadres of El Salvador. These women risked their lives to publicly renounce the terror of El Salvador's disappearance campaign of their son. They refused to stay silent despite torture and murder. Reverend George Lee, who used his pulpit and his printing press in Mississippi at the height of Jim Crow to urge others to vote. He was offered protection by the White Citizens Group if he would cease his voter registration campaign. He refused, and he was murdered. But there are other saints, the ordinary people who came and fed us and wiped our tears. These could be people who showed us their wisdom and constancy for decades, or they might have been so small that their lives were a tiny, holy spark of joy and grief. They could be sisters or friends, teachers or preachers, stepfathers or children, and they revealed to us that the power of love, the power of resistance, the power of joy, the power of hope is always stronger than death. And it is always stronger than fear. I appreciate that the Revised Common Lectionary gives us this passage to read today, because there's a lot more tribulation to come in John's Revelation. This book is almost 20 chapters long. There are still pages and pages of God letting people run the earth and one another into ash. But never does God stop sending faithful people to become Jesus among us, who are enveloping us into the love of God and who are enveloped again into God's love after they die. Beloved, I do not know what this week will bring, but I want you to carry close with you this promise that love is stronger than death. And following Jesus, we were never promised an easy life, but we were promised a good life. You're actually told many, many times that trouble will come to you if you decide to go this way with Jesus. If we put ourselves in the place where God is at work, we are putting ourselves with the comadres and with the marchers of Alamance County. We are uniting ourselves to grandmothers who raised babies during the Depression and the sisters who carried their families through grief. We do not know what this week or the weeks ahead will bring, but we know this. Love is stronger than death. And we are a people of love. And no matter what comes, we are ready to continue the work that has been given for us to do, to stand on the side of the dispossessed, to weep with one another. Here we are again, because we rise again and again and again in joy, because God's love in Jesus Christ in our lives and in the lives of our beloved has overcome. Amen.